Mario Chicken.
After Mass, you can go to the city to swim a bit. So, nice weather is returning. Just because last few days before our classes, there was just beautiful weather. Beautiful days, very, very sunny, very hot, and so on. And I hope you will enjoy this. So, let us continue. And first of all, let me please recall or remind you some points, some phrases of our yesterday's talk. We finished yesterday on this point. So, the Russian legal system consists of or includes two types of law. Domestic law, I mean Russian law, and international law. And the main question arises from this. How to connect them, how they do operate and function, being together at the same in one legal system. Which law has preference, domestic law or international law? And the first question is, what is the status or what is the place of international law in the Russian legal system? Where is it? Again, I repeat that all answers on these questions and some other questions have been done, unfortunately, not by legislature, not by officials, not by state power, I mean not by the parliament, but they have been done by the doctrine and the judicial practice. So, as international law is a result of agreed deals of the states, then it should be interpreted and applied from this point of view. Not from the point of view of domestic law. And thus, it should be applied not as domestic law. It is a very important thing for understanding our further talk. Thereby, international law as part of the Russian legal system is not domestic law. So, international legal norms do not become norms of Russian law. And the practice for application of international law norms shows that these norms, norms of international law, are interpreted and accepted by courts and other bodies of the state, as well as by citizens, other subjects of law, as norms of other law, not domestic law, as norms of international law. And further development of practice shows and confirms this statement. Thus, the Supreme Court of the Russian Federation, in its special review, in its special document, review, which is called Review on Judicial Practice Concerning Status of Refugees in the Russian Federation, reflected a current trend. the comp, underlined. Whereas the Finland law on the refugees does not include such definitions, I mean definitions concerning refugees and so on, the courts, in judging civil cases, applied international law norms, not Russian law. And hence, if the Russian-Belarusian international treaty stated the rules concluding with those under the law, courts applied the rules of the international treaty. And strictly speaking, the Constitution does not proclaim international treaties to be a source of domestic law, to be a source of law of Russia. Again, let us recall Part 4, Article 15 of the Constitution. And moreover, having called sources of law in the country, the Constitution does not insert norms and sources of international law in the list of sources of domestic law. In other words, as a result, international legal norms and sources, I mean treaties and customs, international customs, occupy an independent position within the normative part of the domestic legal system. So, okay. Yeah.
Can I ask a question? Yeah, because yesterday we learned that international law forms an integral part of the Russian legal system.
Yeah, right. Integral part of the Russian legal system. But in this way, these norms and sources of international law do not become domestic law. You see?
Yeah. But they don't have to because
they don't have to what?
They don't have to become domestic law because they are
No. In many other countries which go some different way implementing international law, the constitutions of those countries proclaim international law as part of domestic law. That's why I argue and insist that, according to the Russian Constitution, in our legal system, which proclaims international law as part of Russian legal system, and which proclaims direct effect of international law in the Russian legal system, they don't become part of. This is a very important thing, just because when we will talk about hierarchy between domestic law and international law, what norms and sources have superiority, so we will see this again, this very important point. So we will return to this. Yeah. And the summary, concluding. So the legal system of the Russian Federation consists of two integral parts. You see again. At the same time, norms of international law do not become norms of domestic law, and sources of international law, treaties and customs, do not become sources of domestic law. So this some concluding points in this topic, and now we can return to our cases which I offered you yesterday. So I asked you to divide into groups and offer you some two different cases from the real judicial practice of the Russian courts, and we agreed to propose your own decisions or solutions or argumentation, etc. So, what are your results? Did you divide in groups? Did you try to find these solutions, or did you try to discuss on them? Where is our first case?
Yeah, we have been divided into groups, but actually we didn't have a possibility to manage together with each other, and I think that each one separately knew that.
Each one separately.
I hope so.
I hope so.
No, but we also have small groups. For example, with colleague, we have discussions about it. Yes. So
what we do now? Maybe someone tries to offer his or her reasoning, or on behalf of a small group, or what? Maybe you can start, but then you can, for other one, you can continue on, so.
Remind us the
essence of the case.
Okay, the question from the court of Moscow to the constitutional court about
everyone can hear?
Possible collision between federal law, domestic law, and so there was a collision, possible collision between the old federal code, or criminal code from the not from the SSR, but from the Russian.
Do you have your
I have given this paper to someone, but I can recall So the case was that a law court and Moscow court dealing under the criminal proceedings court of the SSR of 1960 dealing with trial by jury, decided that a person was innocent, and jury declared the person innocent, and he was made free. But afterwards, the Supreme Court have the higher court of higher instance confirmed this decision, and then it was a so-called protest of the General Prosecutor, as I remember, and the Supreme Court had decided that the court of the first instance must review this case one more time. And in this situation, a question has arisen of whether it is possible to make a new judgment in a situation when the jury have declared a person unguilty. This question arises because the judge who has dealt with this case explored that this legal norm of the criminal proceedings court, which does not prohibit this situation, contradicts some provisions of the Constitution, and moreover, and more precisely, it contradicts the provision of international covenants of political and civil rights. And so, in this case, this court made a request to the Constitutional Court and have asked the Constitutional Court to decide on this question. And so, I think
it's... Well, my two questions, actually, what the court should do when... there's a collision between domestic law and, domestic law, federal level, and the international law. And second question was, what do I have to do as a lower judge when there is collision between domestic law, federal level, and constitutional law?
Then the Constitutional Court answered, well, referred the question and motivating that, well, we are not considered to answer this question. In other words, you should help yourself. You yourself should answer this question.
Mm-hmm.
And that implied that the judge from Moscow was free to decide that that particular law, when there was a collision between a particular law on federal level and international law, that international law could prevail. Previous.
Yeah. So,
but the second question wasn't answered, and then I asked him, well, why didn't the Constitutional Court answer that second question? Because for us, it's also interesting to know what a judge should do when domestic law, federal level, contravenes constitutional law. And our opinion was that, well, we are both actually, accepted that disappointment, I mean, that the Constitutional Court didn't answer that second question.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'll try to continue. But in other words, the Constitutional Court has formally refused to answer the question, and it declares the case and the application inadmissible.
Yeah.
Yes, but in other words, at the same time, it obviously confirmed that, indirectly confirmed that, of course, there is a contradiction because the international law, this covenant, state other norms than our criminal proceedings code. But the situation was that in our legislation, you have already spoken about this yesterday, in our legislation there is a particular gear, there is a particular instrument of decision in cases of such collision when the federal law contradicts the international law. There is no obligation of the court to the law court to go to the Constitutional Court. It just must decide itself,
mm-hmm.
and to use the provision of the Constitution, Article 15, and the federal constitutional law on the judicial system of the Russian Federation, and to decide according to the norm of the fire force in this situation of the norm of the international law. And I absolutely agree with Niels that the second question, because in the application of the complaint to the Constitutional Court, it was also the question arising of whether this norm of criminal proceedings would contradict the Constitution. And this question was not answered. So I think that in this case, the Constitutional Court a bit restricted its own competence and did not want to decide this question fully. So I think that's the problem. But actually, this decision of the Constitutional Court was well enough, was enough for the lower court to decide this question correctly, I think, and just to implement the normal international law. And of course, then afterwards, when it was adopted the new criminal proceedings clause for the Russian Federation in 2001, as you remember, of course, this norm was not introduced in the new criminal proceedings court. Of course, it was taken into account this decision of the Constitutional Court by the legislature. So that's the case.
Okay.
Yeah.
Some other.
Since I go on from the materials which were given, that no law can be, a international court can decide that contradicts the Russian Constitution. I guess it's a provision of the Constitution, right? And since this treaty of international colonial for sale political rights has been signed and ratified, it's binding on Russia, and this right might be applied under Part 4, Article 15 of the Constitution and such. Well, that's self-evident for me, and probably not for just all Russian judges somehow.
Yeah. Some other?
arguments or suggestions?
Wondering, in Article 15.1 says that the Russian Constitution is higher hierarchy than domestic law, and also the Constitution in Article 50 says that you can't be convicted of the same offense twice, like no double jeopardy. So the prosecution can't appeal an acquittal, right? So that's the contradiction to the Russian Constitution, isn't it? And also ICCPR, Article 47.
Yeah, okay. That's very important. So, some other views maybe? So, next time I think we will divide you into groups right in the classroom in order that you are able to discuss together. It's easier for you, I see how. Yeah. And it must be more productive and helpful for you. So, and thank you for yours and yours and yours opinion. And let me just conclude how this case was finally decided. It is also interesting. So, again, the essence of this case was what law must be applied? The Criminal Procedure Code of the Russian Federation, I mean, a part of domestic law, or the Covenant on Political and Civil Rights, part of international law. The first instance court, I mean, Moscow District Court, the Moscow District Court, initially refused to give concluding remarks. And as you remember, sent a request to the Constitutional Court. What to do? I remind that this case was conceded right after the adoption of the Constitution. Our current Constitution was adopted in 1993, and this case was held about 1995 or 1996. In those years, the judicial practice based on the new constitution was not developed enough yet. And the lower courts were confused very often to adopt international law directly. They were not accustomed yet, because the judicial practice in those years was quite not rich, you know, quite poor. So that's why I think the Moscow District Court sent a request to the Constitutional Court and asked it to give an answer on this question. And what was the result? So let me read the decision of the Constitutional Court and then the final decision. So the Constitutional Court refused to adopt the request of the Moscow District Court for review, noting in its determination, in its decision. In case of conflict between norms of the federal law and international law, in case of conflict, the decision on the application of norms of a treaty in a particular case should be adopted by the court or general jurisdiction itself. So, in fact, the Constitutional Court did not give a decision refused to give a decision. But in fact, it gave orientation to the most conducive court on the appropriate decision. Orientation, how to follow and what to do. I have no idea why then the Constitutional Court refused to give a full and complete answer. I believe that it should do this.
What do you think?
Yeah.
What do you mean by complete answer? They didn't answer the second question. So that they answered the question regard to the conflict between domestic law and constitutional law. Well, we also discussed it. Well, my opinion was so there is no need to answer that question. Well, of course, I would like to hear the opinion of the Constitutional Court. Because the Constitutional Court would say, okay, but we answered your question. We answered your question. There's no need to ask to answer the second question because there is no second question anymore. It's not actual.
Yes, maybe.
We are interested in the answer because we would like to create jurisprudence for the future. So let the judges know. But why should the Constitutional Court create a jurisprudence?
But what happens to this domestic law, procedural? In this concrete case, ordinary court said, yes, I will apply this international law. But what happens to this domestic law in future? Similar cases can arise.
Yeah.
But what happens to this domestic law?
Nothing happens. Each other case, the courts must also apply the norm of the higher courts. And that is all.
But yes. Whether the other court knows that this case has been somewhere other ordinary court.
But this norm is not rejected. It is not cancelled, despite the fact that it's detected. It's not cancelled. That's the procedure.
Yes, but if someone asks the court if the criminal procedure court doesn't contradict the Russian prosecution, as Russian prosecutors recognize the priority of international treaty over federal laws.
Yes. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I believe and I'm sure that the Constitutional Court should do what? To recognize the criminal procedure court contradicting the constitution of the Russian Federation. And then, of course, after that, of course, the Moscow District Court could decide finally this case on the basis of the constitution and international law. But in this situation, the Constitutional Court refused to give any answer at all. So it's
on the second question.
On the second question,
that's our interpretation. You can't excuse that actually the Constitutional Court also said, okay, by answering the first question, I have also answered your second question. Interesting. You understand what I mean?
Yeah.
You can't excuse it, otherwise you can't. Well. Maybe we shouldn't be too optimistic, but there is a chance that actually the Constitutional Court could answer it. I also asked you to answer your second question. At least it was my suggestion this year, but
it must be much more effective if the Constitutional Court answer both questions. Because the fact that the Constitutional Court answered that the first question and said that yes, this norm contradicts the international law, it does not deprive this norm of its legal force, because that's the principle of the Constitution. The Constitution does not provide an absolute hierarchy between the domestic law and national law. It says about the hierarchy in application.
Right.
It's very important.
However, this provision which contradicts international treaty loses its legal force, in which case it does.
In which case it does lose I think only in case when the constitutional courts will find out that it also contradicts the constitution. And I think that the problem is that at that time the constitutional court has not been yet able to use the international treaties in the same way as it does it nowadays, for example. Because nowadays the constitutional court could act in another way. It, I think that if it was the situation, for example, in 2010, 2012, for example, the constitutional court have decided not the first question, but vice versa the second question. It said that it contradicts the constitution in taking in mind that covenant of civil political civil rights. So it means that there, it estimated the norm of the constitution in reflection of with the reflection of the international law and norm, but not much worse. So nowadays, when the constitution, constitutional court declare a particular norm contradicting the constitution, sometimes it is not because of because this contradiction exists with the constitution, but sometimes it's because this contradiction exists with the international treaty. But the constitutional court decide that international treaties, for example, the European Convention of Human Rights, it's the part of the constitutional law of the Russian Federation. And that is why when a norm contradicts the European Court, European Convention of Human Rights, at the same time it automatically contradicts the constitution. And I think it's too bad relevant to decide the question.
Yeah. And that, after that determination of the Constitutional Court, the Moscow District or Moscow District Court determined itself. Article 380 of the Criminal Procedure Code expressly provides for the abolition of acquittal and an interforce. In other words, article allows to retry individuals which were finally acquitted earlier. This is contrary to paragraph 7, article 14 of the covenant, which prohibits to retry persons acquitted by a final judgment. And then, because this court underlined, under part 4, article 15 of the Constitution of the Russian Federation, if a contradiction between the norm of the law and international treaty is found, it is necessary to apply the norm of the treaty. So, finally, the Moscow Regional Court found the final decision itself. So, in connection with the foregoing, the court must apply the rule of international law as the Code of Criminal Procedure Court doesn't govern the revision of acquittal by jury. And on the basis of paragraph 7 of article 14 of the covenant, the group tried against citizens B, V, and L shall be stopped. And the final conclusion of the court held to close in a criminal case due to the fact that these individuals were finally acquitted by a verdict of the Moscow Regional Court, which came into force. So you can see, finally this court decided the case on the basis of international law, on the basis of the constitution and international law, not on the basis of domestic law, I mean, on the basis of the Criminal Procedure Code. That was the main question in this case and for our topic one. So, maybe now let us
come to phase two.
But then I may also add one more thing, very, very briefly. I think that now I have understood why the Constitutional Court did not answer these both questions. We have said that, to our opinion, it must answer the second question, the contradiction to the Constitution. And we could not answer that. I think that now I understood, because actually there is a provision of the final part of the Russian Constitution that in case of the contradiction between the Constitution and the legal norm of the federal of the law, which was adopted before the entering into force of this Constitution, in this particular case, the court just, or other enforcement bodies, just must not apply this norm. And that is all. And that is the principal difference between these acts which were adopted before the Constitution and those which were adopted after the Constitution. Because in case when the law enforcement body find out this contradiction between the Constitution and the act which was enacted after the Constitution, in this case, this court, according to the legal position of the Constitutional Court itself, must go to the Constitutional Court, and the Constitutional Court will deprive this norm of legal force. But in the situation of these acts, legal acts adopted before the Constitution, this is not obligatory. So in this case, the Constitutional Court actually at the same as with the international law, it just confirmed that the courts just must not apply this norm, because they cannot be applied in this situation because they contradict the Constitution. But at the same time, the Constitutional Court said that at the same time, we are not obliged to deprive this norm of legal force. So that's, I think that's the decision of it.
But you said that there is a provision in the Constitution that said that the Constitutional Court shouldn't...
It doesn't say that the Constitutional Court shouldn't. It stated that...
judges or other legal...
Yes.
Okay. When it's really written down in the Constitution, then the Constitutional Court could have referred to that provision.
Yes,
but which it did not.
I know. I think it's referred. It's referred in this provision. It's stated that norms of the Criminal Proceedings Court of the RSFSR of 1916 as of acts enforced before the Constitution cannot be applied only in partly in that part which is not in contradiction of the Constitution.
So then the second question wasn't.
No, it was not answered on merits. It was answered formally. Yes.
It was the same way.
It seems that the complaint was fully invisible in both way. In both questions, it was invisible. I think so.
Okay. Thank you for your remarks. And maybe we can now come to the case two.
We also didn't have the possibility to meet. I really don't know where the paper is. I can recall what was the presence of the case.
Can you find the letter?
Yes.
And please remind us this case.
I can remind you what was the case about.
Yeah.
And it was... about adoption, that a married couple wanted to adopt a child. The court said, yes, you can adopt the child. The court changed the name of the child and the place of the birth, but refused to change the date of the birth. But the vice chairman of the Supreme Court of the Russian Federation appealed against this decision and asked to recall the judgment, insisting that the applicable provision of the family code, which said that the date of the birth cannot be changed,
this norm in the family code contradicts the Constitution and the Convention on the Rights of the Child. And in his opinion, the court had to apply the Convention and Constitution, not the family code. The protest of the Vice Chairman of the Supreme Court was considered by the Presidium of the Human Regional Court. And so that there were three questions. The first one, what was the resolution of the Presidium? Second one, what was the final decision of the case? And the third one, according to norms of what law it was decided. As I said, we didn't have the chance to decide it or talk about this case in a group, so.
In a group. But you can offer your own decision. Your own decision. Or solution.
My opinion.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm a little bit confused about this case, meaning that in my opinion, this is a question of substantive interpretation. As I think, in my opinion, there is no need to change the date of the birth of the child at all in order to guarantee the secrecy of adoption. So probably there is no norm in the Constitution which would say that yes, you can, you must change the date of the birth. And as I looked in the Convention of the Rights of the Child, there is no norm either. So I can't see what's the substantive problem here. So that's why I will not come to this question, what norm to apply, domestic law or international law. Because in my opinion, everything is okay in this family code at the domestic law. So, sorry.
Excellent. Maybe, yes, please?
Yeah, as far as I know, we had a meeting about this for the reference of the mix of lawyers and non-lawyers. As far as I know, there's even a norm in the Convention on the Rights of the Child that was confused about its application because there's even a right of children to know about their origins. So it protects the children and adoption to have information about their origins as far as possible. But based on what we saw yesterday, if we talk about what norms should be applied, that both in Article 15.1 and 15.4 of the Constitution, both the Constitution is recognized as supreme and then international law. So we thought it seemed obvious that these should take precedence over the family code. Mm-hmm. Based on what we saw yesterday.
Mm. So the convention takes a precedence, yes? The convention.
The constitution and the.
Yeah, yeah.
Because both the constitution and the convention on the rights of the child are both.
Yeah. Thank you. Sam Arif. But anyway, thank you for this, and let us see what the Red Court decided. On this case, in this case. So the Presidium of the Human Regional Court satisfied the protest of the Vice Chairman of the Supreme Court. Its reasoning, according to the norm of paragraph 2, article 135 of the Family Code, the change of the date of birth of an adopted child is only permitted before his or her 1 year old. This norm contradicts the Constitution of the Russian Federation and the Convention on Rights of a Child. The court did not recognize that this provision also limits civil rights of persons. Thus, the court must apply not the provision of the family code, but norms of the Constitution. Note, as the act of direct effect and norms of the convention. And general conclusion. What I would like you to do from these two cases, and what I tried to illustrate you, to show you in this within this topic. To just try to show how national courts got to accustomed to implementation, to application, not just or not only native, domestic, internal law, but also other law, not native, but international law. It was quite long and difficult process. So, which has been continuing for many, many years. But anyway, the practice has been developing and so this.
I was just wondering what norms the family codes in violation of the child's rights or identity, or what article in the Constitution, what article in the Convention of the Rights of the Child? Do you know what norm it was in violation of?
The court didn't mention the concrete norm.
They just determined that it was in violation of the Constitution and not saying what norm in the Constitution.
So, then, what norm of the Constitution?
Yes.
So, the norm of Article 15. Because in this case, in this decision, the court did mention exactly what concrete norms are just based on the spirit of the Constitution, maybe, and the spirit of the human rights and this convention. So that was the decision.
I was just thinking maybe that only on that.
So, a general conclusion to this topic, number one. So, we can see that given the Russian legal system, two types of law operate and function and are implemented, national law and international law. And not just official bodies, not just the courts, but all the types of subjects of law, including individuals, including citizens, legal entities, and other, refer to, reserve to, use not just own law, but also international law. And this is a very important fact in our current legal system, in our current judicial system, in our judiciary nowadays. So, and now we can start the next topic, which is entitled Living Conditions Necessary for Implementation of International Law Norms. Legal conditions. Let me leave it for a while. We will need this. So, legal conditions necessary for implementation of international law norms is the Russian legal system. What is this about? What is the question about? And what is the topic about? And why these questions arise? Before us and also before every court, before every national court, including the Constitutional Court of the Russian Federation. Why? From the topic one, we know that little domes of different and independent systems operate and function and are implemented in the Russian legal system, Russian law and international law. But does it mean that an absolute and free use and implementation of international law norms in every situation, in every case, does it mean an absolute possibility to refer to all international law norms or not? In order that you are able to realize what I am asking about, let me again to start with two or three real cases again, real cases from our judicial practice. And that, yeah?
Sorry,
so
you have
one of
the questions, wondering what's the relationship between the Constitution and the international law? Does the Constitution have primacy over international law?
Yeah, the Constitution.
It's a higher hierarchy.
There is a very special topic, next topic about hierarchy of the Constitution, international law, and the federal law. Okay? Just we come to this topic logically, step by step. So, and now, just about legal conditions. So does it mean that does it mean an absolute and free use implementation of all norms of international law in all situations, in all real cases, or not?
It depends on this concrete norm, whether this has direct effect or not, whether who is the like target group of this international law norm. If there is a treaty enacting that the state has to do something, then there is a question whether this has direct applicability or not.
But the same time, there are some general provisions, some general points. And so let me talk about this, and I'm sure that after that you will see what I'm talking about, that you will agree with me, maybe. So, again, let us start with a couple of real cases from our judicial practice. So, case one. Citizen A filed a suit against a customs service to challenge a demand for the payment of customs charges. He contended that it was exempt from customs charges under the current law. The defendant, customs service, argued that the payment was charged under the terms of international treaty. The agreement between the governments of the Russian Federation and the Kyrgyz Republic, which is titled on the principles of recovery of indirect taxes in mutual trade, which entered into force. The plaintiff, citizen A, insisted at the same time that this agreement cannot be applied, due to the fact that it was not published, and therefore he, plaintiff, could not know about it. So, questions are, might this treaty be applied before its publication? Please provide for the answer with your argumentation. And let me give you some prompting, just in order you can find maybe your own solution. Here the question is publication of a treaty, the main question in this case. Case 2, number 2. city court of Estonia, it is again a real case held in our regional court. A city court of Estonia, in a civil case on application of B, citizen of Estonia, on recovery of any money from citizen C of Russia for maintenance of their daughter, decided in favor of the applicant. Then, mother filed an application on execution of this decision on the territory of Russia. In accordance with the CIS, Commonwealth of Independent States, CIS Convention on Legal Aid in Civil, Family and Criminal Cases. There is a special convention in this CIS organization. The application was considered by the Tumen Regional Court, Court of Tumen Region. In hearing, the defendant insisted that this convention cannot be applied in this case because Estonia was not a member of CIS. What was the Tumen Regional Court to decide in these circumstances? What are your view and reasoning? And here a question is, again it's my prompting to you, and here the question is participation of the country in a treaty. And the most fresh, the most latest, the most new maybe, case considered at the Constitutional Court of the Russian Federation just 1 or 2 months ago, This thing, case number 3, citizen B was forced to pay extra customs charges for goods transferred through the boundary. A customs service confirmed when new rates of charges had been established by a new agreement, international treaty, signed by the Euro-Asian Economic Community parties. They agreed to apply this agreement temporarily until it enters into force. And let me remind you that the convention to apply the international treaty before it's entered into force. So, as for Russia, to apply this agreement temporarily until it enters into force. As for Russia, it was done in accordance with the federal law, in accordance with this convention, and in accordance with the federal law, which is called on international treaties for the Russian Federation. In accordance, citizen D objected to this, arguing that the agreement was neither in force nor published. He appealed to the Constitutional Court with a complaint on constitutionality of the provision of the 1995 federal law on international treaties about temporary application of international treaties without their publication. And what was the decision of the Constitutional Court on your view? And here the question is entry into force and publication again. Publication before this, before entry into force. So, let's these cases is the starting point of our next topic for your homework, for your consideration. But next time, tomorrow morning, first I will again give you some portion of new information based on the doctrine, on judicial practice, and on the legislature. And after that, you will is dividing in three groups, just in the classroom. And in a few minutes, please offer your opinions. Is it okay? So, let us make some break and to give the next words to my colleague, Dr. Volkov.
Just Kovner will be next.
Just what?
Yeah, Anatoly will be next speaker.
Oh, fine.
Great, no problem.
Professor Kovner. See you tomorrow.
Sergei, is there a question?
In that case, we can read it. Do you have an electronic copy of that?
Electronic copy? Yes. Yes.
Somewhere. Maybe you can send it in an easier way.
Yes, maybe.
Someone will take photo and post it on Facebook.
You can do it from this or maybe just from
I
Так, стирайте за собой, я сейчас буду писать. Привет.
So, Сергей, я не знаю, будешь здесь или теперь на пляж пойдешь, вот позже есть две вещи. Мы будем здесь встречи, чтобы посмотреть фильм. Его не интересует, который тоже возможен для вас.
Какое кино будет?
Я покажу, что мы на втором этаже. И вот сегодня это немецкий документальный фильм о Ходорковском. И другое в том, что после этого фильма у нас будет такая экскурсия.
А, во сколько? В 5?
Да. Будет в 5:15 встретимся там с тем городом. Мы отсюда пойдем в 5.
Если ты сказал, где 5:15.
Я вас после этого аэропорта, да,
боюсь, я с тобой не взял. Ты мне напишешь. Я найду. Я подойду. Я туда
лучше. Я пишу, если...
Я
сюда. Я тебя...